Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Dan Goggin out of College Station. And Dan has a great story, at least for somebody like myself. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Love stories from accountants. They're always the most interesting to me. My dad was an accountant. I took like 8 years of accounting to decide not to be an accountant. But let's go ahead and share your story with everybody. Started out as a CFO. Wow, certified financial planner. You and the wife are both accountants, right?
Yes, chartered CPAs.
Wow. I don't know what you guys do at home. You got to have something to count over there, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, we kind of split up the management of the property. So my wife does a lot of the back office, and I do a lot of the front office.
That's good stuff. Let's go back. You were working. You decided to retire. Tell us what you did before you retired, and then how that transition worked for you. Because your story is great. You had it all planned. It was all there. You figured it out. Writing a book on how to do it. Let's go for it.
Okay. Yeah. I joined Lifestyles in kind of reverse order than most people. Most people join with a goal of retiring in 5 years. I retired and then joined Lifestyles. But I have a pretty good story about why I joined. I spent about 30 years as a hospital CFO building financial models and managing hospital finance. And I thought I was prepared when I retired. And then in Murphy's Law struck in my very first year of retirement, markets dropped 18%. It was one of the largest declines since the Great Depression. That was 2022. But fortunately, before I retired, I had built a model that I used to rotate my investments between dozens of ETFs and cash if none of them made sense. And by the end of 2021, my model had told me to shift to cash. So I was sitting there by July. I was still sitting in cash in July of 2022. And a friend of mine reached out to me and said, "Hey, what are you doing in retirement?" You know, I told him I built this model and I was following it. And I was kind of waiting for the model to say it's time to get back in the market. And in the meantime, I started writing a book on financial freedom. And that's when he surprised me because I didn't know he was a Lifestyles member. He was a Lifestyles member for 15 years. And he said, "You're writing a book on financial freedom. You should come to a Lifestyles event. Dell's going to be speaking at their anniversary event, and you ought to come to that and join me." So I did. And he said, "You know, with your background, you'd probably be a good lead," which I didn't know what that was at the time. But I went to the case study and then the 2 day that followed, and the information that I received was better than anything I've ever seen on real estate. I've read tons of books and just, you know, was never able to pull the trigger. But even more impressive at those meetings were the people, the leads and the passive investors that I met who shared kind of my mindset and values. I felt like, you know, Lifestyle was the community I was searching for. So that weekend I joined, I became a lead shortly thereafter. And almost a year later, I syndicated my first lead property, which is a small 16-unit apartment building near my home base.
Well, it's a perfect storm, and it worked out perfect for you. Let's talk a little bit about when you developed your own model, okay, because this is really interesting to me. You were moving between ETFs and cash. Can you share with people what an ETF is for the people out there listening who don't know what that means?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so an ETF is it's basically an exchange-traded mutual fund. And the ETFs that I was investing in were very low-cost index funds. So funds that track the Standard & Poor 500, S&P 500, or the Dow Jones, or, you know, the small caps, et cetera. But they're very low-cost funds that trade like a stock on a daily basis. You could trade an ETF every second of every day if you wanted, well, while the market's open. But so they trade just like a stock, but they're very low cost investments.
So was your goal to try to have some type of a movement? In other words, buy low, sell high kind of movement?
No, my goal was basically just to rotate into a fund that that was doing well, and if it started to not do well, rotate into another one that was doing well. And when I say well, I mean I loaded 60 years worth of historic data into my model, and I use that model to indicate when it's best to shift into another ETF or cash. And like I said, it perfectly predicted 2022. Not that it's it's not a crystal ball. It doesn't get it right all the time, but it certainly told me, it gave me the warning, Will Robinson, time to move to cash. And I did that in late 21, like November of 2021.
So if you had these funds, did they pay distributions? Because they're based on, money markets. Money markets pay distributions. Did the fund pay distributions?
Did the fund pay distributions? No, it would basically either increase or decrease in value on a daily basis.
So basically what you did was you took a money producing vehicle, which is the money market, that would produce distributions and turned it into a non-distributions vehicle, which was basically a stock, is what you were doing.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
All right. So that obviously goes against a lot of my beliefs of what I wanted when I retired. When I retired, I wanted to have cash flow. So how did you see that differentiation when you came and started listening to what we were doing?
Yeah, I saw it right away. The thing I liked most about lifestyles, one was the people, really. I mean, they're people just like me, people that are, financially astute and really, really want to do the best with their money. But real estate in particular, like you said, depending on how you invest, if you're a lead investor, that's more like a job. So that's not a passive investment. I'll tell you that much. But it can be a very lucrative investment. On a passive side, you're investing in a deal and you're benefiting from someone else managing the property and you're just the investor. And so you invest and your goal is to have quarterly distributions from that property. So that's the distribution side of what you're talking about. The property increases in value and you get quarterly distributions from the income it produces.
You know, an interesting point as you say that, Dan, is that you actually get it in like five different ways, but you don't feel it when you're passive because you're not really paying attention to it. But you're actually paying down the mortgage, which is creating equity, right? The tenants mm-hmm. are paying that off for you.
True.
So over a period
mm-hmm.
of time, you just don't see it when you're passive. You don't think about that type of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You've got appreciation. You've got forced appreciation. If you take that property and you're doing something to it to turn it around, make it grow as far as value in there. So you've got tax advantages that really do change the return on many of these deals comparative to other types of, investments you might take on and so forth. So there's a lot of stuff going on, but as a passive, you just don't feel it. As you got in here, though, it's interesting to me that finding people, like-minded people, was important to you. Were you surprised how open people were with their ideas?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, anytime someone asks me about lifestyles, that's what I say. It's the people. Now, the mentors were excellent. I mean, I had great mentors within lifestyles that helped walk me through the deal. And anytime an operations issue comes up, I call my operations mentor and she sets me straight. but the leads and the passives that I met were just excellent.
So, Dan, I'm going to take you back. When you came to your first 2-day, I always like to ask people, what was the aha moments? For someone like yourself, is highly educated in accounting and so forth and financial modeling, what was your aha moments?
Well, the biggest aha for me was you walked everyone through exactly how to do it. I mean, you could actually leave that 2-day and start investing on your own. I actually thought about it because I'm a DIYer. I told my wife, I went back after that meeting and I said, I don't think we need to join lifestyles. I think I can do this on my own. I picked up some good tips. And she said, no, you really need to have the mentors behind you. And I'm glad. I mean, I joined and it's been really well. But the thing that the biggest thing I picked up out of that 2 day though was all the stuff I had read in books was really superficial. And you walked through, especially the second part when we talked about apartment building investments. That was really the key for me. The single family investments I kind of understood through a lot of the books I had read. You even actually went into that in great detail. I wasn't interested in investing in single family. I wanted to do a multifamily project.
Okay. So what specifics really caught your attention? I mean, the amount of detail is, that's great. Okay. But in specific, was there anything that's like, aha, that's there. That's the secret that, or not a secret, nothing's a secret, but you know what I mean? That's the point that I just didn't get there. That's going to make things work now.
Yeah, I think on the apartment side, I hadn't really given that any thought. I always thought I would just do, you know, a small one or two unit and invest that way. But what I liked about the apartment side is it was like having, like mine's a 16 unit. It's like having 16 houses side by side by side with investors. And I mean, with residents, and I do have investors as well. But You could scale faster with multifamily, and that's really what I was interested in. I have a good chunk of my money, obviously, in the stock market, like we talked about, and I wanted to diversify my investments, and I thought the best way for me to go would be the apartment side. And so when you were presenting the apartments and the strategy to find a good property and then try to improve it in multiple ways. The thing that really impressed me most was the best product, best price. You weren't talking about being a slumlord. You were talking about going in, fixing it up right away, getting it to, you know, top of the market so that you can attract the right residents. And that's what I did with my property. In the first month, I put new roofs on both buildings, improved the stairways, improved some of the plumbing issues that were there. And I've been keeping that property 100% occupied since acquisition, so it's worked out pretty well, knock on wood.
Well, that's great. That's real great. So you, as an accountant, as someone based in numbers, how was your feeling about leverage and about debt? Did you have any, bring any ideas or theories in on debt when you came in, and did they change?
No, I didn't have any qualms about using debt. I actually wound up getting an agency loan, which is a government Freddie Mac loan that and investors. But the best way to grow your portfolio or your net worth is to use leverage. But you don't want to be over-levered, and you don't want to be in products that have variable rates on the loans. Mine doesn't have that. Mine is a fixed rate loan. But so I think the best way to grow your income is to use leverage.
Now, in your resume, you said that you did a passive deal before you did a lead, before you were a lead and did your own syndication. What did you get out of doing that first?
Yeah, so I joined Lifestyles, and then I was worried. I'm like, what if I never can get in a deal? I mean, it was a fear that, you know, this is great, but what if I can never find an investment? Well, I found an investment the very first month I was in it, and so eased that fear right away. And in fact, there's been so many deals that have been offered that I could have got into that I didn't because I was focused on becoming a lead. That was kind of an irrational fear. But nonetheless, I did get in that first deal. And the first deal, going through the syndication as a passive investor, was eye-opening for me. So I saw the process that, you know, it's one thing to read about it. It's another thing to actually do it. And so I got into that first investment, and I saw how the process went from, you know, start to finish, from presentation to purchase, and then the financial reporting after. And I thought, well, I could probably do a better job at that. So I was actually kind of excited about becoming a lead. So after I did that first deal, I went right into the lead training. And like I said, within a year, I was in my first lead deal.
When you picked that first deal, where did you put your emphasis? Were you paying more attention to the deal or to the syndicator himself doing the deal?
I didn't know the syndicator, so it wasn't the syndicator themselves, it was the deal. So the deal had to make sense for me in order for me to get into it. And it was a property in San Antonio, and my wife used to work probably about 3 blocks from where this property is located, so I knew the area well, too, so that helped. But overall, it was the economics of the deal that attracted me to the property.
And how large of first shot did you take at something? I mean, did you put a little teeny bit in, a medium, large? What did you do?
It was smaller on the smaller end. There was a good presentation by a passive not too long ago who said, you know, try to get in for your first deal. Try to get in $25,000 to $50,000, and I think that's the right area to target for your first deal.
Yeah, so you don't make a mistake with a large chunk of money as you learn the process and work through it. Mm-hmm. So it's good.
The whole process of diversifying, you know, diversify within the properties you're in as well.
So once you were a passive and you saw how the thing functioned, how long before you were deciding that you wanted to do it yourself?
Almost immediately.
Well, it looks like we're at a break, so we will take a short break. Be right back with Dan Goggin and the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Working hard but still falling behind? Learn how real estate investing can help you build income and move forward with purpose. Text RADIO to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Dan Goggin out of College Station. And Dan, let's take you back to when you first decided you were going to go ahead and be a syndicator, be the lead investor, and you started taking the classes. What were the first steps, kind of the walk us through all the steps that you went through, both physically and psychologically, to get prepared to start this new business?
Yeah, so I started the training, which I thought was excellent, and it was a series of online videos that I watched through Lifestyles. But the other thing that I also did was I started reaching out to other leads and offered to do whatever I could on their property, kind of on a pro bono basis, just so I could learn. And I was shocked at how many leads called me back. They didn't know me. One lead actually offered me to come and visit both his properties, and he spent a day in the life of a lead and showed me everything he does. He actually even gave me access to his property management system, which I thought was really above any expectation I would have had from a cold call into a lead. But like I said, everybody I called, either they needed help or they said they would spend some time with me to kind of show me what they do. And another person I called was an IRO, and he was a little bit further away from College Station. And so he actually spent 2 or 3 hours on the phone with me walking through everything he does on his smaller properties. And this guy he told me everything from, how he advertises for residents to how he uses smart locks on his doors so he doesn't have to change out the locks when one resident leaves and another one comes in. Things I do today at my property. He actually wound up being my due diligence team. He and I walked every one of the 16 units when I went and purchased my property And he pointed out everything he looked for, which was awesome because not only did I get to see every unit, but I got to see it through the eyes of a guy who had been within Lifestyles for 10 years and managing his own properties. So from the get-go, the training was great. The contacts that I had with other leads was excellent. And then when you fold in the mentorship that you get through Lifestyles, it was a perfect learning environment.
When you started putting this together, I mean, just those stories are excellent, by the way. But when you start putting this together, somewhere along the line, you have to start thinking about raising capital. How did you focus on that?
Yeah, my original mentor was Curtis Haynes, and very successful owner within Lifestyles, and I started looking for properties, and I started doing what they call practice underwriting. So I would look at deals that were being offered in my area, and I would do the financial analysis of each property using the Lifestyles MFQA tool, which was excellent. Of course, I didn't trust it to start, so I had to deconstruct it and rebuild it myself. But turns out it was very good, and it's what I use. But that's the accountant in me, or the financial analyst in me. But anyway, so I was working with Curtis, and I wasn't ready to purchase this property. Basically, you have to have linked to a certain number of passive investors in order to pull down a deal. And I had only just started building my passive investor list. I only had 75 passive investors when I put an offer on this property. So I was a little worried I might not be able to pull it down with investors because, not everybody's at the right point where they're ready to invest money when you're ready to pull your property. So it's always advised to have a pretty good passive investor list. And mine wasn't quite big enough at the time, but I went forward anyway because I knew that I could make excuses on why I shouldn't do this property but I really didn't want to do that. I wanted to jump in. I figured if I had to put a little extra of my own money in it, I would do that because I found a great property. It was only about 30 minutes from my house, which is ideal for a smaller property so I can be there. It only takes me a half hour to get there if anything happens. I wound up pulling down the deal with the help of a KP, a key principal, who I didn't need for the financial side, but I needed for the operations experience side. The agency loan, Freddie Mac, required that I have a key principal in my area. And fortunately, there was already a number of leads in College Station that are part of Lifestyles. So I was able to tap into one of those.
All right. So you came at it from an accountant point of view. In other words, the people were the last thing that got considered, which is pretty interesting because, some people, that's the first thing they consider. They're afraid right from the beginning they can't get the people. But then they don't spend enough time on the other aspects of the deal. You were more, wrapped around the other direction, which is good, actually. Put your focus on the deal itself more so. As you went in and tried to tie this stuff up, the property, talk about the going through the contract phase and getting it locked down.
Oh yeah, that was an interesting one. So like I said, when I found the property, it came actually through Lifestyles. Lifestyles had sourced the property and had sent it out to all the members. And so when it came across my desk, I didn't do it the right way. I should have immediately tried to tag it and get it secured so I would be first in line to actually purchase it. But I actually got in the car, I drove over there, I walked the property because I was so close to my house and I wanted to see it. And it was a great property. Two buildings, 8 units in each building, 16 units total. And I immediately said, this is, and I know the town. I used to be the CFO of the hospital in that town. So I know the town really well. It's just a small tertiary market. Then I called the realtor from Lifestyles who had listed it and said, I'd like to put an offer on this property. And at that point in time, there was a number of other Lifestyles leads who were considering that property. So I wasn't first in line. I was probably second or third. And the property ultimately wound up being offered to the lead who was first in line, and that person went under contract for the property. For one reason or another, that person got cold feet and backed out of the deal, which happens all the time in real estate. And I just so happened to, and normally when you put an offer on a property, Lifestyles doesn't allow other leads to bid against you, which I think is a smart strategy, because it can only hurt Lifestyles leads to have, you know, their peers bidding up the property against them. So I stepped away from that property and I started networking. So I called a mentor in San Antonio and I said, I'm looking for a small, 16, 32, something small, for my first Lifestyles lead project. And he said, hey, I got a great property for you in Caldwell. And I said, Jeff, listen, I already tried to put an offer on that property. There's another lead that invested in it, and they're moving forward with it. And he said, I'm the mentor on that project. That lead just backed out. So if you're interested in it, you should consider putting an offer on it now before someone else does. And I jumped to it. I put the offer on it, and it was accepted. And then, like you said, the people side, then I started, I was a little worried I didn't have enough passive investors connected to me. I talked to Curtis and he said, look, if you don't have enough right now, you could possibly ask your KP to ask his group if they would be interested in investing in this deal. And that deal filled within a couple of days. So it didn't take me long at all.
Next question. You talked about doing the due diligence and having people help you do the due diligence. Was that, in fact, did you enjoy having other people there with you while you did your due diligence?
Yes, actually, it was the lead investor that I spent a couple hours on the phone early on, right after I joined Lifestyles. He came out. He was in Beaumont. He actually drove out to Caldwell and walked every unit with me. And this guy, he knew so much. He had been a Lifestyles lead for 10 plus years. And so he was instrumental in helping me. And my property was small enough that he and I were able to walk every single unit, which was great for me because I wanted to know exactly what was wrong with everything, if there was something wrong, so I could plan to fix it and model whatever that cost would be into our property performa.
So you went through due diligence. I assume then you made a plan. You sat down and wrote out a plan of what you were going to do at takeover.
Yes.
And as life goes on, you took it over. How did the plan, you know, like, what is it Mike Tyson says? Everybody has a great plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't have any huge gotchas because we had done such a good job during due diligence that we uncovered the property was in great shape. It was built in 2010, so it's a relatively newer property. There were some things that needed to be fixed, but there was a crack in one of the plumbing lines to the sewer that needed to be fixed. The roofs needed to be replaced. Some of the stairs needed to be painted and fixed in some areas. So I did all of that right away, and that was part of my pro forma anyway, so I was planning for that. I didn't plan for a couple of residents to move out right away, but I immediately filled those units. My record is a 12-hour turnaround. I had one resident move out on December 31st, and another one move in on January 1st. So it was a very quick turnaround. And what I've learned in this process is you have to have a good team behind you. You have to have a painter. You have to have a good maintenance guy. And if you have that, you can turn these units really relatively quickly.
Okay. Did you have a project that you had anticipated? You said you did the roof. What kind of project list did you have when you took over?
Yeah, I had the roof. I had the plumbing. I had the painting. And then in terms of overall improvements to the unit, the units were in pretty good shape. So it was really more of a maintain, wasn't any, I didn't have to do any deep remodeling. I've, since had to replace some water heaters and, some of the blocking and tackling that just happens from owning a property. But I more targeted the revenue growth side too. So I was looking at how can I grow the value of this property by growing its net operating income, which that's one thing I learned in the very first 2 days is, like you said, there's five ways to grow your income within a real estate project. There's actually 22 or 23 different ways. And I tried to approach as many different ways as I could. So one thing that we had on our property were washers and dryers that the previous owner wasn't charging rent for. And those actually became the bane of my existence because the water pumps go out on those and you have to take it apart and fix it. So I definitely wanted to make sure I was getting some revenue for those. The other thing we had was internet on the property. We have a tower in the back of our property that the internet provider in town uses to beam internet out to smaller areas in and around our city. And we weren't getting any rent for that. And in fact, we were paying for internet for the property. So that was another area that I quickly assessed and said, well, wait a minute, we should be getting that free. And they should be paying us to have the tower on the property. Let's see, what else? Some of the other leads created reserve parking in their units, and so I did that as well. And you can charge for that, so there was a $25 charge for that. Just any way you can grow the revenue. The rents were extremely low. For the property. I've increased the rent 16% since I took over. That's pretty much what my blocking list was. There's a few things on my list that I never got to. I was going to put storage on the unit. And I haven't done that yet. But that's still to be considered.
So now you're at the point where you've had it for a while and you've decided that, like all of us do, it's pretty much a universal, I could keep working this one forever. I could add the storage. I could do some more things. But at this point, I see it's just easier for me to go buy a 50 unit instead of incrementally increase 16 units to 16 units plus $1 more. It's much easier just to go and buy 50 or 100 units and make the move. You've come to that conclusion. How long did it take you to get to that point?
It was probably about a year. About a year, 1 year in, I said, this property is doing really well. It's like, knock on wood, it's been 100% occupied since I took it, since I acquired it. And about a year into owning it, I realized I think I'm ready. It was a learning lab for me. I had never managed a multifamily property before. So I learned so much. And the lifestyle mentors, both my operations lead and the other leads that I've talked to, mentors, were so instrumental in helping me learn the property management side.
Well, all right, Dan, we've come to the end of the show, so I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us. Hope to get you back. We'll get more of it. The rest of you out there, remember this. It's not just money. It's a lifestyle. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Dell's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.